Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Wine Times, the podcast brought to you in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club, with me, Makita Oliver.
And me, Will Lyons, the Sunday Times wine columnist and vice president of the Sunday Times Wine Club.
And this show, Will, is quite fantastically all about wine. Red, white, rosé, sparkling.
Italian, French, Australian, South African. And all the rest.
That's right. This series, we're going to be tasting our way through those tannins, which you're going to explain to me what that means later on.
I really don't know.
And we won't be doing it alone. No, not at all. Who do we have, Will?
Oh, you can't do it alone. So every episode, we'll be joined by a well-known guest for some good wine, good times, and good conversation.
This is like so much fun. And remember, the wines featured in this episode and all others are available through the Sunday Times Wine Club. If you haven't signed up yet, there'll be a link in the episode description for you. I mean, I love them. They sent me a huge case of wine already, so I love them.
So whether you're an expert with a broad palate,
or you just tend to stick to the house stuff,
in this show, you're sure to find something that will suit your taste.
We're here in the wonderful Wydadlee kitchen. It's beautiful. It's just beside the River Lee in London's Hackney Wick. It's owned by the incredible, vivacious, stunning, talented broadcaster and chef, Andy Oliver, who is a wonderful woman. She's also my mother. Yes, she's my mother. Sipping with Will and I today is the author, podcaster and dog whisperer, Emily Dean. You'll recognise her voice as the co-host of Absolute Radio's Weekend Breakfast Show with Frank Skinner, and also from her podcast series, Walking the Dog, where she's joined by her Shih Tzu, Raymond. But many of you may also have had the privilege to read her book, Everybody Died, So I Got a Dog, which is both a deeply moving and beautiful account of her experience of having to deal with trauma and grief. Emily, welcome to Wine Times.
I'm so excited to be here. A friend of mine did once buy me a case of wine from the Sunday Times, and cupcakes are nice, but that was a welcome sight on my doormat. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. And it was gorgeous. It was a while ago.
Yeah. We called it the Box of Dreams.
I got one. It was the Box of Dreams.
Have you had the Box of Dreams?
Yeah, it was great. It's great. Once you get it, it's very hard to go back, isn't it? Can't go back.
Once you've had the Box of Dreams, Makita. Yeah, exactly. But in full disclosure, I did say to you, didn't I, before I came on here, that I'm a bit wimpy with alcohol. I can drink, but I just like to know that I'm not getting drunk, if that makes sense.
I think it's brilliant. I mean, the older I get, the more discipline I have. So I'm very good now at having a couple of glasses and saying that's enough. But also, I remember when I was learning about wine, back in the mid-90s, and there was a lecturer called Michael Romer who used to say, wouldn't it be nice if you could take the alcohol out of wine? And we looked at each other as, you know, students, like, what is he talking about? But actually, it would be nice because you get all the flavours and everything. And as you get older, you don't want to have a huge slug of alcohol every time you...
It's quite the commitment to decide to get drunk rather than have some wine.
Yeah. What I don't like, Makita, though, is that he was looking directly at me as he kept saying, as you get older.
No, sorry, I was talking about myself.
I'm just saying you didn't look at Makita.
Divert that gaze over here. Not to worry, thank you.
I'm just saying, I know.
Already.
Okay. Do you remember when it was you first started to drink wine?
It sounds so funny.
When did you start drinking?
I feel like I'm in therapy. Well... My parents, I grew up in a very bohemian sort of media family. So wine was a very big part of that. My mum was an actor, so I don't really need to say anymore.
Right, no, that'll do.
And my dad worked for the BBC, so yeah. My sister and I, they weren't very conventional people, yeah. So they didn't teach us how to tie shoelaces. I still can't really do it, which is why I have to wear... That's true, I'm really bad at tying shoelaces, so I wear trainers with velcro.
Oh, my goodness. And they can teach you to tie your shoelaces, surely.
Would you? Yeah, I'd love that. And they didn't teach us how to ride bikes or those sort of life skills. They didn't teach us, but they did teach us that you had to let red wine breathe and... how to use corkscrews and...
the important things.
Yes, exactly. You would say that. And you do drink less these days. Is there a particular reason or you just feel like you wanted a change?
Yeah, do you know what? I was never... I think with me, it was probably about 4 years ago, I just started to feel the effects of alcohol. And as has already been pointed out, I'm a little older now. So I think it was my... I'm not going to let that go. If I will sit next to Peter Oliver, the most glamorous, beautiful woman in the world. So I did, I sort of just felt, it was more the hangovers.
Yeah.
And it wasn't alcohol. And the thing is, I'm actually, a lot of people say, oh, I just don't like the taste of alcohol. I always loved the taste of alcohol. I actually liked, again, the whole process of sort of drinking wine. I just don't like getting drunk.
Yeah.
And I don't like the hangovers. So that's why I'm making you do low alcohol wines today.
Now, I know very little about low alcohol wines. Tell me more about that.
Well,
world
it's a
world.
Challenge. So it is a challenge that I don't think I've met this week. So I'm really in favour of this. I mean, there is a huge movement, particularly the evidence, I think, points to the younger generation actually wanting to drink, non-alcoholic drinks or drink less, and I suppose they're more aware of their health, but perhaps. But interestingly, the beer market has really stolen a march on the wine market. So whereas there's a plethora of really interesting, I think, low-alcohol, non-alcohol beers, and Heineken have just bought out a draft beer.
That's non-alcoholic?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, if you go to your local, just go to your local supermarket, you can get Ghost Ship and Brewdog. And they're pretty decent, actually. I think with wine, the point is, it goes back to this, it's connected to the land. It's artisan farmers. And as we were saying on the episode last week, you can almost, see the vineyard where the wine is made on the label. And winemakers are just interested, really, in making great wine. As opposed to non-alcoholic wine, because you then have to. There's two ways you can do it. You can either pick your grapes, the sort of viticultural technique, so that's pick your grapes a little earlier, or you can extract the alcohol out in the winery. But there's never been a very convincing example.
So it absolutely is a completely new process for a winemaker to make non-alcoholic wine.
And there was there were several okay-ish examples. So what I've done today...
What have we got today? What are the okay-ish ones?
What I've done is I've got some sort of rules of thumb that we could do. And
I'm worried I've got the okay-ish ones.
We're getting all the great
If you want sort of lower alcohol, and I'm not talking, because if you think the average alcohol, average percentage alcohol of a bottle of wine in the UK, I think if you go to the WSTAs, is 13.2%.
I was going to say 9.
Yeah, yeah, 13.2.
Is that low?
And because of I think that's fairly high actually.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first started drinking wine in the late 90s, it was between 11% and 12%. But because we've got two factors, we've got warming climate, but also a stylistic change. So if you pick your grapes later, they have more sugar, they're sweeter, and they're more drinkable, they're more supple, so people love them, but the alcohol percentage has crept up. So something like Red Bordeaux is now 14%, 13%, 14%. Sometimes
stay away from that.
In a hot year, it could be 15%, and 15 is the same as sherry, really.
So it's all about picking the grapes.
Yeah, well, it's all about cooler climates.
Right.
So we need to look at the cooler climates. So you're looking at places like Champagne.
Oh, that sounds like me.
Canada, Germany, Tasmania, England. But our journey starts in, we have to start in France. So we're in the Loire Valley.
Oh, are we?
Yeah, yeah. with a famous wine, which isn't particularly, sorry, this is going to sound ludicrous, it's not particularly low alcohol at all, but it's 12, so it's old-fashioned.
And can you just remind me again, what did we say the average was then?
13.2.
Okay, so it's...
Yeah, and as you can hear, it's a screw cap.
Can I ask you about screw caps?
Yeah, yes. does it mean they're worse?
I don't know. Because, Makita, I'm the same. I've seen some really nice wines, and I've been in shops and I've asked the man, it's not always the man, but I've asked the person serving me to recommend a wine, and they'll say, well, this is incredible, you know, the wine geeks. Mm. And they'll direct me to a screw cap, and yeah. I'll say, oh, no, I don't like the cap.
It's true. You can't turn up to a house party with a screw cap.
Well, it's a bit like the punt at the bottom, you know. If it's deeper, is it better quality of wine? The thing about screw caps is they were sort of Southern Hemisphere inventions. So it was Australia and New Zealand that really drove this. And, again, I wouldn't want to be... Well, I am quoted on this because I'm on the podcast. But, okay, so what happened was in the 80s, you had this huge democratisation of wine in the UK. And we were buying a lot more wine from Australia and New Zealand, who were getting their corks from Portugal. But, and I wasn't really drinking wine in the 70s and 80s, but I believe from people like Robert Joseph, who was chairman of the International Wine Challenge, about two bottles in every 12 were corked. And the Australians and the New Zealanders just completely had enough of this. So they invented the screw cap. I have been to a very posh tasting at something called the Institute of Masters of Wine in London. There's only 392 in the world.
This is the kind of places
we're Yeah, there's more grand chess masters. And this was by the great Chateau Margaux.
There's definitely a special handshake.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And they're trialling over many years their top wine. And they're bottling it under screw cap, under cork that's made from artificial sort of diameter, and under glass as well. And I went to a tasting at the Institute of Masters of Wine, just to say it again, about 10 years ago. Was it 10 years? 8 years ago. And we were served all those wines, but we weren't told which stopper they're under. And we had to make notes and give our opinion. And what was interesting is the corks let in a little bit of air. So you get a slight... more character the wine, a slightly more farm, you know, funky farmyardy, what we were talking about last week, so earthy character.
Yeah, natural.
Mm. Screw cap doesn't let in any air.
Right.
So it's completely pure flavour. So you do lose a tiny bit.
It's a bit more clinical.
But they're perfect for wines like this, for white wines, for picnics. Let's be honest, that's a Chateau Margaux, and that's a very rarefied wine. Most wine is made to be drunk as soon as you buy it.
So... Yeah. This is gorgeous looking. It's almost gold.
Yeah, well, so we're at the bottom of the Loire Valley. We're in the. This is Muscadet, one of the most, again, a sort of famous wine from the 70s. Probably one that
Can I tell you what? They used to have the wine box sometimes as
yes,
well.
Yes.
And there was a thing called Paul Masson's California Carafe, which was everyone had, which had a weird, which was kind of a round top. Like screw
yes.
top.
Yes, yeah.
But that was sort of, there were a number, as you said, it was when wine became, there was a democracy around wine. So you had sort of Le Piador and all these things. Which
I love that era.
Yeah. I'm very excited to taste this.
So the thing about the Loire Valley in terms of winemaking style, it's a collection of villages and grape varieties. But the common thread is freshness. They're all about sort of aperitif wines. Wines that you would have in your fridge door and just pull out when you come home from work, or whether you stop work now, because we're all working from home. And this is a Muscadet, so it was very popular in the 70s and 80s. And used to be sort of,
it
you
smells
know...
smells like the 70s.
Yeah. The grape variety isn't Sauvignon. Oh, yes, it's,
it does.
It's,
do you know what I mean?
This so yeah. smells like my parents'
Not
kitchen.
That I was alive then, yeah. but it just smells, I don't know.
The grape variety
is
Melon.
She's done it again.
Melon.
Not that I was alive then.
And then what happened was they became so popular, they went for quantity, so their yields went, but they lacked quality. And like another really old famous region in France, Beaujolais, it's now coming back. Mm. New generation, taking it really seriously, not making as much wine, but going for quality. Mm. And, you know, it's really old-fashioned to say, look, I'll have some Muscadet, but it's perfect. Oh, yeah. So that is good. That's a
God, that sits in
so
your mouth.
So it's leafy,
isn't it?
Tangy.
Mm.
almost salty on the aftertaste, isn't it?
Yes, I was going to ask what it does taste
like. Yeah.
But I like it.
Yeah. And we've spoken about this. Wine isn't always about fruit. It can have flavours that are savoury and sour and salty, which actually is very appropriate.
So is that grape more tangy generally?
Yeah, so it's the grape variety is Melon de Bourgogne. It's a little like a Sauvignon. It's in that sort of crisp, aromatic, lean white wines.
Yeah.
And it's a shoo-in. I know it's really old-fashioned to say this, with oysters and shellfish. I mean, half a dozen oysters.
It does make you want to eat fish, though, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, it does. It just wants to, pick you up. It's a father and son. It's Christophe and Pierre-Henri Gadet. And
do you have memories of France, Emily?
Well, it won't surprise you to know when you hear a bit about my family that we did used to go there occasionally.
Yes. The Bohemian tribe.
The Bohemian tribe, we did. Mm. We would always pitch up, always late, always arrive with wine as well. That was always, that was another thing, that my parents would never have dreamt of going to someone's house without a bottle of wine. They would have just considered that really bad manners.
Yeah.
So that was drummed into me. And actually what was brilliant was when I was a child, when we were young, my sister and I would bring wine. We were quite young to friends' houses to give to the parents.
Right.
So we would sort. It's really strange.
But all the parents were like, loved those kids. Like they'll bring wine. Like,
but you didn't think the wine kids.
Yeah, where's the wine kids?
You didn't think anything of it because you knew no different.
We would just turn up and say thank you so much, and then we would hand over the bottle of wine to the parents, because I think it was my parents thinking, well, actually, this is a bit of a nightmare for the parents. They're having to do all the work. They're hosting you.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we would. I think definitely, whenever I've travelled, just going to France and Florence, actually. I don't know if we'll be visiting that region, but just those, when you have wine in those areas, it just really sticks out in your mind. I'm going to sound pretentious, but it is that very Proustian thing, isn't it? That if you smell that. And when Makita said that, I know what you mean. It does smell of my childhood this bit, which was that sort of, it's a slightly crisper wine,
yes,
isn't it?
So this big thing crisp, in the lean, and it's funny you talk about that Proustian thing, so that's sort of memories. I always associate these sorts of wine with days like today when it's really cold, but the sun's shining. I mean, I don't go skiing, but I imagine if you were skiing, this would be a nice thing because it just sort of, and you go into the wine bar. Imagine you're in Paris, you know, by the canal, so imagine. You go in and it's warm and you can smell the fug of the kitchen. And then you have a nice glass of white wine. It just picks you up, doesn't it?
If you're going skiing, though, that's why I'd never go skiing, because I'd sit in the bar.
You'd just be, they call it?
Après-ski.
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 You'd just be après-skiing.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. Remember, the wines featured in this episode and all others are available through the Sunday Times Wine Club. If you haven't signed up yet, there'll be a link in the episode description for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Where are we going now on our journey across
the world? Well, so we will come to a slightly lower alcohol. So a good rule of thumb as well, if you're trying to sort of keep the alcohol on the moderate side,
yeah.
As I say, cooler climates, so sparkling wine. And sparkling wine never creeps up in because you want that tart acidity. We're not going to champagne. We're actually going down
to... It was nice seeing you.
No, sorry.
Are you going to leave now?
let me pour it out. We're going actually down to, believe it or not, Provence.
Oh.
For a sparkling rosé.
Oh, Petit Rosé. Lovely.
Made near
you
Toulon.
Look so excited.
I do love rosé.
I mean, come on. It's November when we're recording this, but let's just think of Provence in the summer.
I like this already.
You know, the land of tomato and garlic and vivid blue skies, lavender thyme. I just love Provence, don't you?
And it's interesting, isn't it? So this is sparkling wine, not champagne, as you say, but that's, I feel, again, that snobbery, there used to be a little bit about that. I remember there's that great line in Peep Show, and someone turns up and says, oh, and brings Prosecco, and says, oh, thank you, and you've almost brought champagne.
Yeah, yeah.
And there did used to be that attitude a bit, that it was this sort of poor relation. But I think that it feels like it's, in its own right, it's kind of respected and...
Yeah,
celebrate.
I think also now that we have so much good sparkling wine available in the UK, that it's not almost at affordable prices, by which I mean £5 to £5 to £500, I suppose. But it's one of those lovely, affordable luxuries. I was thinking about this during lockdown. You know, you don't have to spend £40 a bottle or even £25 a bottle to have that nice, you know, just a glass of fizz before supper.
£5 for Prosecco does always shock me. I do think, that's cheap.
That is cheap, actually. So it's
every and then
also,
I go buy the £9 one.
This bottle looks much more expensive.
Yeah, it does. It looks lovely. Yeah. It's a really beautiful rounded shape at the bottom there. And it's kind of almost a coppery colour, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's, again, this isn't a, you know, keep going on about this, intellectual wine, but it's just a wine of... That I think reflects Provence, which is essentially sunshine, exuberance, and the sheer joy of good living, isn't it, really? It's not a wine you want to think. It's a couple of glasses, and then let's go in for lunch, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's enormously popular.
Is it?
Yeah. So, well, sorry, I shouldn't have said that before you tasted it.
Now the pressure's on.
Bloody better be good, Will. It's like very, very fizzy.
Yeah.
Low, really quite. That's like a high fizz level.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
I like it. I like that it's fizzy.
It's a whole party in your mouth.
It's like it's Alan Carr in a drink.
That's what I mean. It's like fizzing away.
Yeah.
But it's like we've gone from our wine bar in Paris to a picnic.
Emily, let's talk about your lovely dog, Ray.
I should have brought him
today. Oh, my God. Absolutely, you should have. And how old is Ray?
Ray is 4. I lie about his age sometimes. I don't lie about my own age.
Emily!
Why do I do that?
To keep Ray young or because you forget?
It's because he's small. And I feel a bit embarrassed that he's small. And I think when people say, how old is he? I feel the next part of that is, well, I hope he's going to grow.
Right.
And so I think I'm quite a people pleaser. So what I say... So I lie. I think, well, I'll take 6 months off his age. Like they care. The person I see in the park is going to like me more because my dog is 6 months younger.
Yeah.
And I've got into terrible trouble sometimes where I've told one person he's 3, another he's 3.5. Mm. And those two worlds can't ever collide.
And also, that's what I mean. You've got to keep up with the lie. Like, I thought you said your dog was 4. You're like, oh, yes, of course.
It's awful. It's like, oh, there's Raymond, he's a 4-year-old. No, I was told he was two years, certainly. 4 months.
But they are just the greatest companions ever, really, aren't they?
Well, you've got, what's your dog?
I have a dog with my parents called Scout, but recently, because I've recently started to live alone, she stays with me a lot, and she's my best friend in the world. Aww. And I do feel that quite purely. Is that how you feel about Ray?
I mean, I can't even begin to describe. You know, people watch those sort of dog weddings on This Morning and laugh at them. I sit there very seriously thinking, this seems like a good idea. No, I do. I do a really... Because he did on a serious level. You know, he came into my life at a time when he was just so amazing, just having him, because I'd had quite a tough time. And just having Ray suddenly in my life, he just brought utter joy into my life. And every night I say to him, I say, oh, I'm so grateful, you're so... I'm so lucky to have you. You're such a lovely little boy. And he goes to the end of the bed and puts his arse in my face.
Yeah. So, yeah. But that's really him saying, I love you too.
Yeah.
And Ray came into your life after a really terrible time and lots of bereavement for you. And you did write, quite honestly, about that time. Did it help?
Yeah, do you know what? I think it was one of those things where my sister died very suddenly, and then both my parents died, and it was all, you know, I used to joke very darkly, it was a bit Game of Thrones episode where they just didn't space all the bereavements out. They just thought, let's kill them all in one go. But it was tough. It was really hard, just because nothing prepares you for that amount of loss in one go like that. And I think the dog thing was just, my sister had always really loved dogs, and she had bought a dog. She'd got a dog called Mr. Giggles. And he was very comforting to her two daughters, because I have two nieces.
Oh, okay.
Who I help my brother-in-law look after now, and they're lovely little girls, but it was very hard for them. And I felt just, it's funny how the presence of a dog, just even things at the church, you know, it's frightening for kids going into an environment like that, and everyone's in black, and there's all these sort of, you know.
Yeah.
And just, we decided to bring the dog in. And the vicar was like, well, it's highly irregular. And I was like, the dog's coming.
Mr. Giggles is coming. Okay.
I'll take it up with God. But it was great. And it just brought this spontaneity and joy into. And I think, so yeah. So after that, I was determined to get a dog. And I did. And I called him Raymond, because I wanted it to sound like the sort of old man in Coronation Street. You know, old school names. And my sister was called Rachel, so it was kind of a nod to her without it being a bit weird. So he's called Ray. So yeah.
So thank you for Ray, really. Thank you for Ray.
He's my ray of sunshine.
Yes.
And you know, I'm going to say, this is a bit of a ray of sunshine for me.
Oh, so if Ray was a wine, he'd be this. Wow. We've never had that.
He would be.
Yeah.
He would be, because it's very, it's sort of effervescent, and it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a good time wine.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to think too much about it. And also, as you know, life can get extremely difficult. So you do need these periods of moments when you just forget about things. And it's silly, you know, just have enjoyment. And that sometimes we forget that, don't we?
Well, where are we going next?
We're leaving France, and we're going all the way over to the other side of the world, to a country where we have been to a lot in this series. We're going back to New Zealand, and we're going to the tip of the South Island, to a place called Nelson.
I know. My father's in New Zealand.
Oh,
fantastic.
He would thoroughly approve of this.
So you know now, so it's famous for hops, berries, kiwis, nuts and cheese, and also...
Kiwis as in New Zealanders?
Is that as in the kiwi fruit, as in the fruit. It's also home to New Zealand's oldest pub, the Mooter Inn, that was formed in 1850, apparently.
Wow.
Wow.
Is this a red?
It's a sweet wine.
It's a sweet wine.
Now, this is, so I you love substitute,
a sweet wine. Oh, Will, you've done so well.
You substitute alcohol for sugar.
Okay.
So it's got residual sugar, but it's less alcohol. So, you know, as a rule of thumb, you know, this is 10.5.
You see, my favourite wine, when I did drink more, I always wished I could just order dessert wine.
Really?
Because I like, there's a Hungarian Tokaj.
Yes.
Which is one of my favourites, which I tasted at the Fat Duck, and I wrote it down, and then I went online and found out the price, and I cried.
Yeah. What kind of price could you pay for a Tokaj?
Well, we have one at the Sunday Times Wine Club, and oh, sorry, just
you can get them for 40,
bash the
40,
yes, 40, but their top wine is called Essentia.
Look
and
that's this.
That's incredibly valuable.
This is I think probably the prettiest wine you've ever poured for me. This is. Orange and gold.
Oh, they can't see it, but it's a golden hue, isn't it?
This would lure me back in.
Oh, right.
Oh, sorry, I should.
To drinking club, because this is my dream kind of wine.
Oh, my God, I'm so happy we've ended in New Zealand with your dream wine. Very good job, Will.
Talk me through this. It's my fantasy.
So, the grape variety is Riesling.
Beautiful.
And it's set up by the Siegfried family, who are Austrians, who came to New Zealand. In the early 70s, thinking, well, the plan was to pick apples and have an orchard. But they diversified, and they now make very good wine, and they make sweet wine and red wine. What you're getting on the note...
amazing.
It's heady.
Oh. It's I'm going to go, it's lush.
It's lush, but you know when you peel a tangerine, an easy peeler, and then you smell, you probably don't know this, but you smell the inside of the skin.
You get that on the note. So as opposed to a Sauterne, this is much more citrus.
Mm. It is actually,
so,
yeah.
So the great thing about Tokaj, with Tokaj you get notes of apricot and honey and sort of marmalade, but you get that wonderful acidity.
Mm.
Sauterne in France is much richer. And with this, I think it's more, so it's perfect for Christmas because you want something always at Christmas to lift you up because you're having so much food. And it's such a gastronomic marathon, isn't it? And
I would love this at Christmas. This is exactly what you want to drink
you
at Christmas.
You love this every day.
I have this on a Wednesday and Christmas.
And is it, it feels like, again, it's more sort of socially acceptable to have sweeter wines now. Yeah. There's no sort of there's no shame. You're not shamed.
Was it an embarrassing choice at one point?
Well, I think it was all that sort of Abigail's party, was it? And, and that sort of, you know, the 70s. Yeah.
Rieslings were just seen as a sort of.
But I think it's good to have it as a pudding.
I tasted that one. Ooh, that is beautiful. I couldn't spit it out.
You're a fundamentally changed woman.
That is absolutely beautiful. I've never really looked into sweet wines. That is stunning.
I didn't spit it out either.
Like, you shouldn't. I don't think we should.
That is one of the nicest wines I've ever had.
So what they do is they leave the grapes, you can imagine, to shrivel up. And imagine a grape when it's young and tart. It's got lots of acidity and it's a bit sour. But as it gets older and riper,
Why doesn't the producer need to have this?
I know, seriously, Ben, you need to try this. It's
now,
so good.
When you've recorded it all.
I believe it's got 200 grams of residual sugar, so it's a lot of sugar in there.
Yeah, but it's a party.
It's a big hit. Have it as a real indulgent treat in the afternoon.
I was going to say the morning, but then.
Yeah, and you could have it with.
Have a real indulgent treat, 8 a.m. Have it in your coffee.
At any hour of the day.
But you could have it with pâté or.
Yes.
Dare I say, after this podcast, you'll get in touch with me. I'll say, I'm taking this advice.
I start
every morning with an indulgent treat.
I start every day with a glass of sweet, Agnes.
Well, I've never seen this happen, but is it in Venice? The older ladies have a little glass.
Oh, here
glass.
We go again.
No, but I mean, I'm talking about elderly ladies.
Unbelievable.
Elderly ladies in there. So, okay, so how would I say this correctly? Ladies of a mature, in their 60s.
Yeah, beautiful.
That they have a small glass of Prosecco.
Right.
With their espressos, sort of mid-morning. Just like a shot. And it picks you. That's the thing. I poured out an enormous glass of this.
Yes.
But just a small glass.
And they're micro-dosing as well.
They're basically micro-dosing. That's what they're doing, aren't they?
What's this called? This is...
Seafried.
It's a Seafried.
Yeah, Seafried. So it's a sweet Agnes Riesling.
And it's not embarrassing to ask for Riesling. No one will judge me.
I
won't be, like, educating Rita.
No. I mean, Riesling is seen as the most... sophisticated grape variety, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And of course, you have the podcast Walking the Dog. Such a lovely, simple, beautiful idea. Do you feel that people are a lot more honest when they're A, outside, and B, with their dogs?
Yes, this is what you do, Makita. We've both cracked the code. Mm. Ply them with alcohol or take them for a walk with their dog.
Yeah.
Because I think there's something about the simple act of walking, because you're not focused on someone. So you can sort of get, you know, it's just a sort of stealth-like thing. It's also that West Wing walk and talk thing. Mm. I think important conversations are good to be had on the move.
I completely
do you know what
agree.
I mean? I
completely agree. And it has been quite a massive success. Were you expecting that?
Do you know, I think, I'm going to make you come on now. We're going to have to make it because I want this.
Yes, I really want to come
You're
on.
You're doing
I
it.
I think we said, can we do next year?
We will. Because I definitely think whenever I sort of invite people on, and I'm sure you feel the same when you're doing this, because this is very informal, and I wanted the same thing. I just think I wanted it to be fun, and I found out, it's so weird, I think one of my favourite guests was Jeremy Paxman.
Oh.
Yes. Because I turned up to meet him, and his dog was called Derek. Hello? I mean, I heard him. I saw him standing there, Bermuda shorts, saying, Derek, you silly idiot, what are you doing? And you've interviewed a lot of people, but I'm sure there are some people that you've been terrified of.
Oh, God, yeah.
And actually, with Paxman, it was interesting because what I realised, he was so nice. He talked about his family. He really opened up. And he talked about Derek, who he just adored.
Mm.
And he talked about his depression and stuff. He was just really sort of open. But I realised, actually, the reason we're also terrified is we only ever see him in a combat situation, because that's his job.
Yeah.
Is to, and to see him in the opposite environment when he was with Derek. I mean, I even said to him at one point, Makita, I started calling him Jezza. I don't know why.
That's how comfortable it got.
I said, come on, Jezza. And then the producer looked at me as if to say, really?
Did you just keep going with Paxman Jezza?
He was fine. I said, do you mind me calling you Jezza? He said, I rather like it.
Yeah.
And we got an ice cream. It was great. So,
but yeah. I love Jeremy Paxman. I knew he'd be a darling. Yeah, and who was your favourite dog? Not person, dog.
Oh, great question. I mean, Derek's in my top five.
Yeah.
Just simply the fact that he's called Derek.
Yeah. What kind of dog is Derek?
Derek is a, I think he's a spaniel, maybe. Ooh, a cocker spaniel, maybe. I get a lot of cockapoos on the podcast. Most of the dogs, sometimes if people don't have dogs, they'll borrow dogs. So like Rob Brydon came on and he said, it got quite confusing because I said, oh, I'm happy to provide a dog. And he went, I'd like a golden retriever, please, Emily. And it was a very simple exchange. And he said, oh, yes, that'll do. But then he didn't... And though it's really lovely working with them as well, because it gives people... that's what you should do, is actually people buy dog, go and get dogs. And it's like, spend time with the breed. Greg Davis did it, and he asked for... He said, well, I can't go with one of your silly little dogs. I'm going to look ridiculous. So he said he wanted a big dog.
Of course.
So I got him... a Rottweiler, but it turned out it wasn't full Rottweiler. It was part Rottweiler, part German Shepherd. Unfortunately, that's called a Rotten Shepherd.
And he walked around with this dog.
He fell in love with it. He fell in love Shepherd. With
it. Well, it's been lovely. I did want to ask you your favourite wine, but I think we damn well know.
Is this your favourite?
Absolutely. This is my favourite wine in the world now.
Do you know what? I'd say I like this almost as much as I like Jeremy Paxman's dog, Derek.
Wow. Okay, so this is number one. This wins.
That is it from us today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club, produced by Ben Mitchell.
You can follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do this via your normal podcast provider.
We'll be back next week with more delicious wines and another great guest, great company, good stories.
Oh, and remember, all of the wines we tasted today are available from the Sunday Times Wine Club website.
Thank you again to A Dadly Kitchen, and thank you to my mum for letting us drink wine in her space.
Ding. Ding. Oh, thank you, Will. Thank you, Will.
Pleasure. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host Luke Jones for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.